First of all, dude, you don't have an accent. Secondly, this is a fucking show dog with fucking papers. You can't board it. It gets upset. Hey, its man, hair falls out.
Walter.
Fucking no. Dog has fucking papers. Over the line!
Yo, yo. Welcome to Over the Line,
the podcast where we blend food and sports together.
Crazy. And then there's just me and you.
I don't know who's blending it, but someone's going to blend something.
So I'm Dan Jacobs. I'm the chef owner of Dan Dan and Estrev restaurants here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I am a 5-time James Beard semifinalist, 1-time finalist. And last year I was the runner up on season 21 of Top Chef.
Those are all amazing things. So I don't have, I can't really, mm-mm. I'm a 3-time Slammy Award winning. No, my name is Billy Zuricat. I don't even know what to call myself. Pop-up chef from Chicago, pop-up cook. It's very difficult to give myself a title. I'm just me. I'm Billy Z. I'm known as Billy Z on the internet, K.A. Trippin' Billy. That's who I am.
You're more than those things, but I think we're all kind of more than the things that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's hard to put that together. But my name is Billy Zuricat, home cook, pop-up chef, social media cook, whatever you want to call it. I'm me. Yeah. And we connected together, 3 years ago or so? Probably.
Yeah, it was via Instagram. And it's funny how, like, you don't really remember how it started. Like, there was a post. I don't know how I got into something that you had posted. I was inspired by it. It also reminded me a lot of your difficulties remind me a lot of my difficulties.
Yeah. So here, for people that don't know the stories and backgrounds, I think we should really like unpack it and take it back. Obviously, you start because I feel like you have a little more out there than I do. And I'd like to hear your journey, and then I'll get into mine.
So I was diagnosed in 2016 with a rare neuromuscular condition known as, Kennedy's disease.
I was going to fill it in for you. Thanks. Line.
We were opening up Dan Dan. I started to realize that I couldn't do certain things that my wife could do in a gym. And it wasn't because, you know, I was like, well, I'm a man, I'm tough. It was more like, I mean, I'm just physically bigger than hers.
Yeah.
I went down to Chicago, went to the University of Chicago, was diagnosed with Kennedy's disease, very similar to ALS, very often misdiagnosed. I am slowly losing my abilities to walk, talk, use, you know, my extremities. I think dexterity is a real issue. And I see a lot of similarities. I admire the fact that you still try to play basketball. Like I have literally given up on it because it makes me so frustrated. Basketball was my favorite sport to play as a kid. And it was super cheap. We could do it anytime we wanted to. Mm-hmm. All we needed was a basketball. But, you know, I can't run. I can't jump. And I just, I've become so frustrated with it that I just won't even do it.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And it's funny, you mentioned that, you know, you remember seeing a post, but you don't remember exactly how we connected.
Yeah, no.
I actually remember it like yesterday. Like, I really do.
God, somebody remembers.
I remember like the weirdest obscure things, but then like big moments I'll just completely like forget about. But no, so my story is a unique one. Yours, how it took you about a year or so to get diagnosed, or how long was your
No, it was really quick. Like, we went to the University of Chicago that day. I took a blood test 7 days later, then came back. But it was really the neurologist who happened to be my sister-in-law's attending physician. So my sister-in-law was on her it's like a, what do they call it? It's a residency.
Yeah.
She was on a residency at the University of Chicago, and that's how we kind of just, it happened real fast.
That's crazy. I mean, mine was, a different journey, I would say. Similar, but different. Mine starts 11 years ago. So I was 30 at the time, playing basketball. I played sports my entire life. Basketball, namely, was my favorite sport. Played it majority of my life. I worked in sports media at ESPN Radio in Chicago. I was a producer. Started out producing White Sox baseball. Produced the 2005 World Series. Produced a bunch of programming. It's a good time. It's actually 20. They're celebrating the 20-year anniversary now. So I'm just like reliving these highlights are coming up. I'm like, man, I produced that. Like I was there. Like it's pretty crazy. But produced White Sox World Series, produced Bulls basketball. And then namely, I was the producer of the Waddle and Sylvie show, afternoon sports talk show. It's still on the air in Chicago. And so sports is a huge part of my life. And around the age of 30, I was still playing basketball recreationally at this point. just a few times a week with friends and such. And I started losing my balance while playing. I would just basically be backpedaling on defense and fall over. And at first, I just chalked it up to being 30. And this is just what happens. And you're just...
I think we both did that.
Yeah, I just kind of like ignored it. And because it wasn't every game. It was, you know, maybe every 5-6 games we play over a span of 3-4 hours. So it wasn't anything to really like bat an eyelash at first. But then as time went on, those falls would happen more often. You know, I noticed like the muscle mass in my legs getting smaller. I'd wear like leggings or tights under my shorts and or compression tights, and I'd like pull at them and they're becoming baggy. And I don't know if you know this, Dan, but tights should never be baggy. And it was messed up, but I did what I did, like what I think a lot of probably men would do in their early 30s, and I just ignored it. And it kind of like just let it continue happening. First of many wake-up calls was a trip that I took to Paris with a girlfriend at the time, and we got to the Notre Dame Cathedral, and there's a spiral staircase to go up and see the city, and I was like trucking trying to get up these stairs and sweat my ass off, and it was really difficult. And I finally got to the top, and it was like an episode of The Simpsons. I swear, I got up there, and like when Homer always has like the hot dog vendor like chasing him in the area, I got up there, and for some reason there's one folding chair just right there. I'm like, oh, thank God. I just like sat down. It was so funny. But I sat down at that point. I'm like, oh shit, this is like something is real here. And when we got back home, I went to the doctor in 2016. And I mean, I got nothing but a bunch of medical bills and no direction. And I just said, screw this. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm just going to just do what I did my whole life. I'm just going to get up and I'm going to work. So I got up every morning, worked out, and tried to fight it. And I got stronger for a little bit. It worked out with a personal trainer. And ultimately, it was just putting a Band-Aid on something that was more serious. And the falls that I would experience on the court now were happening off the court. I needed a railing to get up and down stairs. When I was sitting down, I had to push up with my upper body. But the crazy part is friends and family had no idea anything was wrong with me. I just kind of played out like nothing was wrong.
It's so weird how we can hide these things and people just don't notice. Like,
no.
They just, you know, won't see it.
No, you know, because for me, because I worked out, people knew I worked out, I would just like say it's leg day or something, you know? And that's kind of funny thinking about what realistically is affecting me and what was the problem. But yeah, I just kept kind of like trying to ignore it. But then all of a sudden, the world changes in 2020 with the pandemic. Gyms closed. The active lifestyle that I had to like kind of keep fighting what was going on became a sedentary lifestyle. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing drop-offs now, more so than normal. The falls were happening a couple times a week. And I just, I knew something was up. I was with a new girlfriend at the time, who's actually now my wife, Rachel, the best thing ever happened to me. She noticed something like on our second date. She's like, something's wrong. I noticed you trip back there, and you know, what's going on? I said, I have some kind of weird muscle issue happening. I don't know what it is. But it was also in the middle of the pandemic. I couldn't go to the doctor. So she said, just do me a favor. Like, I know it's kind of a hot button thing with you, and it, you know, gives you a lot of anxiety, but like once the world opens up or whatever, I need you to go back and try to get this figured out. And so crazy part in this story here is, in 2021 now, it's like kind of tail end of the pandemic. I wanted to get out of the house for a little bit. We said, let's go up to Rosemount. Let's go to the outlet malls. Go to the Nike store. Let's just walk around. So I take one step out of my car, my leg gives out, and I fall. And I fell tons of times over the years, but I never hurt myself. This time I felt a pop, and I'm on the floor in this cold-ass parking lot, and I can't get up. Cars are driving by. People are like looking at me on the ground, and I'm like just waving people off because I'm just like adrenaline's hitting me. I don't know what's going on. I'm just like freaking out. I compose myself, pop up, hop to the car. I sit down. I remember telling Rachel, I'm like, hey, babe, just give me a couple minutes. We'll go inside. We'll go shopping. And she's like, Billy, look down. And I looked down. I was wearing a pair of Adidas Ultra Boost sneakers that are like all mesh. So you can kind of like when you see your toe box, if your toes are pointed up, you can kind of see, you know, your toes pushing against it. It looked like something was poking almost straight up, and it was my big toe that dislocated on the fall. I like...
You didn't feel it?
Or? I felt it, but I think that the adrenaline like hit me and I didn't really feel it. And then I saw it and then I immediately felt it. I'm like, oh, fuck, this kills. And so we had to go to the ER and get the thing popped back in, which was the worst pain of my life. Getting that, it made a sound that like it's so gross. It sounded like someone bit into a head of cabbage.
Yeah, everybody knows
it was the worst. But yeah, I ended up seeing this this surgeon or ER doctor, and they're like, "So what happened? Describe it." I'm like, "Well, I have an underlying issue here. You know, my leg gave out," and so that was like the wake up call to go back to the doctor. And Rachel's close friend was a neurologist at Rush Medical Center in Chicago. Referred me to a different neurologist, and he was like dedicated to. He's like, "I will find a diagnosis for you. Just come in." So a week later, I think I get into the doctor there, and the medical industry changed so much from 2016 to 2021. There's genetic testing for what he thought was a neuromuscular disease. And so they swab my nose and my cheek a week and a half later, after 8 years of trying to figure out why I was losing my balance, why I was falling. I was diagnosed with what's called limb girdle muscular dystrophy 2L. So it's a rare form of muscular dystrophy that I was born with, yet did not show any symptoms till I was 30.
Is that normal?
It can hit you at any point in your life. Mine is kind of pretty rare. There's 28 different subtypes of LGMD, and I have one of the most rare versions of it. A lot of people know it, like they'll see it when they're younger. So for it to kick in like when you're 30 is insane. So I was born with this, but it didn't take shape until that point in my life. The cool part of my story, and this is where the whole food connection comes in, when I lost the ability to play sports, I didn't work in radio anymore. I'm a naturally creative person. I needed a creative outlet. I joke that I traded my jersey in for an apron, and I taught myself how to cook and bake. Whether it was watching cooking shows, reading cookbooks, deep diving things on YouTube, it just became a passion for me. Instead of going to the gym and shooting 100 three-pointers, I'm making 10 loaves of bread or making pizzas for friends and family just to get better. And over the years, I just started, kind of became a personality for me. People just knew that like cooking provided calm for me when I had nothing but turbulence around me. After taking a trip to the farmer's market in 2020, I came back with a bunch of shishito peppers because I joke that I black out when I go to farmer's markets. I get so excited and seeing all these crazy ingredients and stuff. I bought all these shishito peppers home. And at this point of my cooking journey or whatever you want to call it, I was at the point I didn't need recipes anymore. I trusted my ability to and understand of concepts of flavor. And so I made the shishito pepper cream sauce, paired it with corn, pickled jalapenos, mozzarella, and cheddar, put it on a Detroit-style pizza, and I made this one-of-one recipe in pizza that eventually, a year later, I got asked by a pizzeria in Chicago, Pauly G's. The owner became a friend over the years, reached out to me. They're doing a pizza event celebrating the best home pizza makers. Asked me to make this pepper and corn pizza that I call the Sheesh That's Corny for the event at his charity event that we're going to celebrate, like I said, the best home pizza makers. And I made 14 of those pizzas. I've never worked in a professional kitchen in my life, but I was like so prepared for that moment. To make the analogy of sports, it's like somebody who watched film study forever is all waiting for that game. You felt like you know what you need to do to put yourself in the position to win. I did that. I knew how to have a workstation set up. I had all my mise en place in order. I had all that ready to roll. And I handled that like a professional. And it went over so well that people loved the pizza, questioning like, do I have a pizzeria? Where can I get this? And Derek, the owner, was like, so proud of me. He's like, let's put this pizza on special on the menu. It was going to be on the menu in November of 2021. And now this is where the real like origin story comes full circle and comes together. 2 weeks before it's going to go on the menu, it wasn't going to be anything more than Billy's Sheesh That's Corny Pizza on the menu as a special. I was walking.
It's such a terrible name.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
It's so bad.
Sheesh That's Corny, baby. But I was walking my dog Einstein in my neighborhood, and my leg gives out and I fall, and falling is normal, unfortunately. So that wasn't a big deal. But this time it was different because a woman was walking my neighborhood, witnessed me fall. And she literally looks at me on the ground with Einstein next to me, and she just keeps walking. And so when I'm on the ground, I'm sure like yourself, I can't just stand up. I have to push up on something, pull up on something. So I pulled in the fence and I got up. And I was so triggered by just the banana land attitude of someone who not to help someone on the ground is weird, first off. But secondly, I was pissed at myself. I was pissed at hiding this, not owning up to it ever. Even after my diagnosis, like I didn't talk about it. I just kind of acted like nothing's wrong. And I got sick of living like that. So I picked up the phone and called Derek and I said, I want to rename the pizza. I want to call it the Tripping Billy. And he started laughing. He's like, why? He's like, are you a Dave Matthews Band fan? I said, fuck no. They shit in the Chicago River. Or they dump their shit in the Chicago River. But no, I wanted to call it the Trippin' Billy because of my balance issues due to muscular dystrophy. I asked if I could donate a couple dollars to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Let me use this pizza as a way to share my story of reinvention through cooking. Maybe I could turn a shitty time into a positive time in my life. And at that point, he was like blown away by it. He's like, let's do it. And then I decided to just go all in myself, just kind of like I've done. I've always been a dreamer. I've always thought big with anything I do. And so I tapped in my own media skills and started my own little social media campaign, pushing it out there, putting myself out there and doing some interviews with different, it was on WGN TV, some Block Club Chicago wrote up in an article about it. And I started gaining momentum. And just like basketball, I was always a three-point shooter. You know that you hit a couple shots in a row, you kind of get that heat check and you're like, kind of feel like you can't miss. I started getting this confidence where I understood that, you know, food is my voice and my voice has power and I can basically become the voice for the voiceless, you know, for the community that doesn't have a voice in this way to reach a demographic that the association probably would never reach. And so I decided to start collaborating with Chicago restaurants with my pizza, with sandwiches, tacos, with you name it. I've had a beer. I've had an ice cream bar. Flash forward now, it's been 3.5 years. And this is where I say I don't know what my title is, but I have raised now $73,000 for the Muscular Dystrophy Association in 3.5 years. And I've done over 90 pop-ups in Chicago and one up here in Milwaukee at LA Voice. It's been a long ride, you know, kind of getting this. And this is how leads into how we met.
It's Chicago, like a real short course, like meandering course to get to this one. I like it.
I know. It's just like the quickest. I'm really short-winded. A podcast might be the best platform for me to just like, you know, just yap away. But yeah, you messaged me. And so I knew who you were prior because I would come to your restaurant driving up from Chicago and I'm like, Dan's a shit. And I didn't know you personally. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't know about your diagnosis. I didn't know you had Kennedy's disease. So be honest with you, I didn't know what Kennedy's disease was anyway.
Nobody does.
I didn't know what muscular dystrophy was before I got diagnosed.
I didn't know what muscular dystrophy was until I met you.
Sure. I mean, I didn't know what it was before. I didn't know who the MDA was before I started advocating for him. So it's unfortunately the situation we got kind of put into it. But Chicago Tribune wrote a feature on my story. And the next day after like the article went out, or even like the morning, I think it was like the morning of the article, I got a DM from you. And you're like, hey, man, you know, kind of explained everything. And from that point, I consider you, not to get like sentimental or anything, but I consider you like a brother through disease. We've become friends through similar situations, bouncing similar situations off each other and having somebody to relate it. Because like when you have a rare disease and you have issues, you feel like you're alone. And knowing someone that's like, okay, wait, he knows what it's like to have like weakness and almost fall every time you walk in a kitchen. Or also, I looked at you that, hey, this guy's a badass chef. I love cooking. We both kind of think about food constantly, but both kind of like sports too. We're both Bears fans. And like, and that's kind of how we get to where we are now.
Yeah.
Because we've always kind of BS'd and talked about the Bears and different things over DMs and such.
Well, of course, because it starts again, like you said, it's having that kinship of somebody who understands something that you're going through that very, like nobody really does is something that, you know, it's special. And then you then just kind of like, you naturally just have other things in common. Mm-hmm. I love sports. I think, you know, a lot of the people that I met in kitchens that worked well in kitchens were part of teams. And mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to be said about kitchens and team sports. I think they're very similar. I think you have your locker room guys. You have guys that are, you have your star players. You have guys that are role players. You have these same sort of situations. And as a chef, you act like a head coach and you're trying to get the most out of what you have in your kitchen. And, but you also like, you have to design plays or a menu in a way that's going to, you know, lead to some sort of success. And I think there's a lot of similarities in there. Also, like, I mean, sports is just, it's a passion. I mean, there's a reason why you're called a fan. It's because you're a fanatic.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm definitely in that sort of fanatical sort of way. I mean, I've literally made a bet that the Bears will have a better record than the Packers for 10 straight years with my business partner and his dad. I am down 1,800.
How broke are you?
I'm down 1,800. I've only won once, and that was 2018.
2018.
That was it.
Hell of a ride. Mitch, baby. Our sweet boy, Mitch.
I mean, he had his moment. He had a really good game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I just watched highlights this morning. I just watched TikTok came up today. It's like, hey, do you remember this? I'm like, fuck yeah, I remember this.
Four touchdowns.
Taylor Gabriel, baby, two touchdowns.
There was another one. There was another one with, they had a whole thing with Allen Robinson that year mm-hmm. where Allen Robinson was just electric. Like, he made plays. He proved he was a number one wide receiver. And then he, you know, just kind of like meandered through the league after that.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, you know, going back to like, as soon as we finish this, I'm just going to go hit up like YouTube and just watch the 2018 season over again and I'll shut it off before the playoffs, though. I'm not watching that again.
The last couple seconds of the playoffs. Like, I literally walked out thinking that they had won. Or no.
Wait, were you there?
I was at a bar here, and we had our manager dinner that night, and so I was late to the manager dinner because I was waiting for the game to end. And I literally, like, they kicked the field goal, they took the timeout, then they kicked the field goal, you have the double doink. I walked out on my tab at the bar and just went to the dinner. When I walked into the dinner, everybody's like, why are you so mad? And I was like, the Bears lost. And they're like, why are you being the dick? Like, you're acting like an asshole. I was like, no, the Bears lost. They're like, no, they won. And then I had to literally go back because I thought maybe I had missed something. Mm-hmm. And I didn't. No, lost.
No, they lost. I remember he made the first one and they called the timeout. Yeah. And I immediately turned to my friends and came like, he has no shot. He's making this one. there's no shot. And I remember he missed it. The double doink. I laid on the floor for like 15 minutes. I didn't say a word, just kind of laid there.
We've had so many moments like that living here, though.
Chicago heartbreak, man.
There was the Chris Conte to get to the playoffs. Like, oh,
no.
Game.
Oh, no. I just kind of got over that like 2 days ago.
There's so many of these moments I've had. And again, it's just one of these things where I just need the Bears to win a Super Bowl so I could stop hearing about the 85 Bears.
Yeah.
I'm sitting hearing my dad and his buddies talk about the 85 Bears. I'm sick of talking about the 85 Bears. These guys can't keep going to your Costco's and your Walmarts and signing cards anymore. Like, it's time to move on.
No, I'm so done with it. Honestly, I think I've said this to you before, like, off the air. I mentioned that, like, I'm kind of afraid that, like, the 90s Bulls are also kind of that. No, because totally. The Bulls have been brutal. I mean, they haven't done anything since then either. And I'm not talking about Jordan or Pippen, but like the others. Even honestly, Pippen, like, he's become insufferable now. Last couple of years with his books and his weird riff with Jordan, I just kind of done with it too. Like, I'm sick of hearing we got lucky in Chicago. We got the best player ever. Otherwise, the Bulls have never done anything as a franchise besides this. And I'm a diehard Bulls fan. Diehard Bulls fan. Went through the garbage years right after the Jordan years.
Twin Towers.
And the Twin Towers years into the Heinrich, Ben Gordon, Deng run. And then obviously into the Rose years, which we'll probably talk more here in a little bit about. Because I was like deeply involved in that. And it's just, there's nothing. The last playoff game we won was the D. Rose buzzer beater against the Cavs in 15.
That's insane. That's insane to think about. Like, that's that long.
It's bananas.
Yeah, if he doesn't get hurt against the 76ers in 2010 or 2011 playoffs, they win. I think they beat Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals because I don't think Miami wasn't ready that year. That was the year I think the Mavericks won that year in the finals. But it's one of those, you know, as Chicago fans, this is what we do. We have...
Yeah.
We'll have moments here and there. You'll have your 2016 Cubs. Mm-hmm. You'll have your 2005 White Sox.
Yeah, and get the Blackhawks run. But I mean, I'm not even a big hockey guy, so I can't even like.
That was really special. That was, I think that as a hockey fan, like, my dad took us to the stadium when we were kids. Mm-hmm. And I remember him taking us up to the upper deck we were sitting in, you know, always like the nosebleeds up there. And he would say to us, whatever you hear, do not repeat. And so that became this thing that we just had to keep. We just had to be quiet the whole time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a fun time. I had a great time. It was the best summer of my life, 2010. It was literally my summer of George. I didn't have a job. I was, and I can say this now because it's legal. I was selling weed in Chicago. I was working like odd end jobs for my buddies for cash. And I was just hanging out and watched every playoff game.
Wow.
I literally like, it was an amazing, amazing summer. It was completely my summer of George.
That's so fun. That was the year I resigned. I resigned from ESPN in 2010 in March. So like right before I started so I left ESPN and I'm currently in the same, I've been in the same job for 15 years. Who the hell am I? Oh my God. Like that doesn't even like happen anymore. And I feel like in our generation, but I've been in the same company for 15 years, but I work in logistics and transportation. So I'm a freight broker and logistics manager during the day. And that's what's funny. All the food stuff I do, trust me, I know that. This is why we're doing this. So hopefully this blows up and I don't have to do that anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. It's exhausting and it's not me in any way. But I left there, left ESPN in 2010, started my first day on the job was March Madness, opening day of March Madness 2010. And I remember specifically starting and saying, hey, guys, do you have a TV at the office? And they're like, no, but we'll get one. I'm like, yeah, that's going to be like very crucial for me. Coming from a career in sports, like I'm not missing the opening 2 days of March Madness. And I need to be able to watch the games. So I was like watching the games.
Are you one of those guys that go places for the opening weekend of March Madness?
No, I did it one time and it was in college, and it was because I had a sports talk show in college, and for a talk radio class we were doing, our professor gave us the greatest incentive ever. He said, if any of you guys in the class can put together a remote broadcast that is either at a large venue in Chicago or like out of state, like a bigger, larger scale broadcast, that can be your focus for the semester. You don't have to come to class. Just you can take your tests and stuff online, but you can just focus on your broadcast. And one of our friends in the class was actually interning. It's kind of a hilarious story. He was interning on the Celine Dion show and in Vegas at Caesar's Palace. So he was able to get us connections to broadcast from Caesar's from like the balcony of like where she does her show. So we went out for the opening weekend of March Madness to do our one broadcast up there. And then we were given free tickets to go see Celine Dion after. So they're just like three dudes.
It's just like jamming out.
I was like, Heart Will Go On. And I'm like,
near.
And I'm just trying to like scroll for sports to score against scores. But yeah, no, that was, I never really went anywhere for opening weekend. I have a tradition now where a buddy of mine has a place in New Buffalo, and we ride up there opening weekend. We just hang out, watch games there for like a couple days and just hang out. But otherwise, like, I watch probably the least amount of college basketball that I've ever watched in my life at this point. But it's always fun to just especially watch that opening weekend. There's kind of nothing like it.
I'm not a huge college basketball fan because I didn't go to a college, and I feel like it's really hard to kind of follow along. I know that it's funny because I've had long conversations with, I had a 3-hour basketball conversation with Tom Colicchio, who, you know, will say to the end of his days that it's college basketball or nothing because it's the most pure form of basketball. That being said, there's something I think to be said about what OKC is doing right now and how it mimics a little bit of that. I'm going to ask you something and then I'll tell you my opinion on it.
Yeah.
Is this the end of the buy a star era? Like get three stars and just surround them with a bunch of garbage and see what happens? Mm. Or is it time? Like, can you look at what OKC is building? Is this the new blueprint?
I think that it's still going to happen. OKC's different. They just have a front office that's competent. They've always had it. They've always done the right things. Like, think about how does a franchise recover from losing Kevin Durant, James Harden, Russell Westbrook?
They signed Paul George and then trade him for SGA.
And like a million other things. Like, it's just, it's bananas how they like keep getting that turnaround. And it's because they've made smart decisions. And, you know, even like a little move. As a Bulls fan, I did not want to see Alex Caruso go. I loved Alex Caruso. He was so much fun, but he wasn't going to be, for what we had, it was kind of pointless. So I get it. But like, that's a player that he needed. Like, that's a guy that fits perfect on that team. And that's a great move to make. Instead of paying Josh Giddey money after he goes silent in the playoffs for them, let's take a chance. Let's move him out for someone who's actually a better defender and who's going to be a glue guy and put everything he needs for this team to win, who's won a title and knows how it is to win in the playoffs like he did with the Lakers. So I to answer your question, I think that it's going to be a case-by-case situation. People are still going to take that swing for that big player, but I see that like now that era of those guys are now getting to the point where their careers are winding down. You know, LeBron, KD, Steph, these are guys they're getting older. And the Young Bucks, Shea, Ant, you know, these guys are the ones that are going to be at that forefront. And I think that this OKC thing, they're almost doing it Spurs-like, like the 99 Spurs, you know.
Where they're just kind of, it's like a factory farm almost.
Exactly. I mean, like, they're not even, the way they play is not like, they're not wildly entertaining. They're kind of, people think they're boring, especially Shea's like a, you know, they call him a free throw merchant. You know, that's just the way, I love that. That's so funny to me.
James Harden's a free throw merchant. Jesus Christ.
I love James Harden. I'll never knock him. He's never going to win anything, but he's just so funny to me. But yeah, I think teams are still going to always take that stab for a superstar because You have to have a superstar to win. You do. I mean, we know this.
Yeah, I mean, what they've allowed SGA to become that guy. Mm-hmm. And they've allowed him to be that superstar. This is the youngest team to ever play in the finals in an average age. I think they're all like it's like a sub 25 average age. Yep. They have, not only do they have a great young nucleus right now, and they're playing at a high level with guys that just know their roles. They seem to get along really, really well. There's something to be said about an amazing amount of chemistry. And then they have 3 first round picks this year.
Like, I know.
They could flip it for somebody like, and this is where I'm going to have my weekly conversation about the Giannis watch.
Well, I think this is actually a perfect transition. As we take this, our initial episode here of Over the Line, we're kind of like basically bringing, you know, our stories to the world and, you know, kind of breaking down what we're going to expect on this. But, you know, I'd like to, you know, as a person, as you grew up in Chicago, but you've been in Milwaukee for how many years now?
I've been in Milwaukee for 14 years, but this is the one thing I gave up. Like there was not a chance I'm going to be a Packers fan. There's not a chance I'm going to be a Brewers fan. And it's funny. It's mostly not because of the Brewers. I could really care less about the Brewers, but Brewers fans are not cool. So I'm not a Brewers fan. I don't care. I know it's a hot take, and I'm sure people will yell at me about it, but I don't really care. So I was, at the time, it was like 2013. You know, all my friends were here pretty much. And, you know, there was a group of us who would watch basketball. And, you know, the Bucks were, they were fine. Yeah, this is the Greg Monroe, Brandon Jennings, Larry Sanders. Not great teams, but they made the playoffs. They would play in the first round.
Zaza Pachulia?
Get out. Yep, just and in and out. And so like I was like, you know what, man, I'm gonna become a Bucks fan. Like this is what I'll root for. Like I can do this. And I picked a really good time because it was, lo and behold, they get to pick up this skinny kid from Greece. Nobody knows who he is. We're like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
And he turns into just a monster. I mean, I remember seeing him in 2017, came back from, you know, from the offseason, and he looked like he had grown wider.
Yeah.
He had all of a sudden, like, he was just big. Yeah. And then, you know, I think Jason Kidd was the first one to kind of really facilitate the offense through Giannis and use Giannis as like a point forward, which I still think is a great idea. And I think Doc did it a little bit towards the end of the season when Dame went down the first time. And I think that was a really smart idea, and I think it worked really well. I think it's time for, you know, us to start looking at, you know, possibly the end of the Giannis era. And I'm going to, you know, again, I feel like this is a bit of a hot take, but, like, I think it's time to move on. And I think this is the time you can get the most for him. But you're going to have Dame come back next year. You can either look towards trading him or, you know, you have one more year with him and, you know, just complete reset and see what we can get out of it.
Do you think that there's any chance that you just feel that the financial flexibility is just done, right? There's nothing.
There is no financial.
There's nothing.
No exemption for Dame. So unlike hockey where you get an exemption for a guy who's out for the year, the most they can get in an exemption is basically like a mid-level. So like 12 million maybe. Yeah. And then you're stuck with Kyle Kuzma's 20 million because nobody's taking that.
Yeah.
There's not a human being. I had high hopes. I thought the Middleton for him, even though I love Chris, I knew that cash was done.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can do. I thought Kuzma playing well on a terrible, historically terrible Washington team could find his own on a better playoff ready, you know, Bucks team. And it especially in the playoffs, like it just,
no.
He looked terrible in the playoffs. I mean, he didn't even play most of game 5.
Yeah. No, it's not. Kuzma's like, he's kind of like just one of those jokey players.
Sure.
Like, yeah, he's just going to put up, he'll put up empty numbers that mean nothing.
Yep. He'll put up 30 points in a 20-point loss.
Yeah, and just wear giant pink sweaters. It's like, that's fine. That's his shtick. Jordan Poole's like that. I look at him like in another.
Same.
Jordan, it's like Jordan Poole, Kyle Kuzma, Nick Young.
They're good fantasy players.
Yeah, they're just like, I just don't take them seriously.
Yeah.
Like, they're good for what there are. Like, they'll put up some points, again, not in big games. They'll put out on bad teams, and they'll get their numbers, get their contracts, and that's it.
I mean, I think there's a way that the Bucks can kind of, that they can keep Giannis and, you know, basically do what Golden State did couple years back when they lost Clay first and then they lost Steph and call it like a step back year or something. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe you can get away with something like that. The problem is that there's just no wiggle room on that roster. You lose Brook Lopez, you still got to find a center that can do something. You lose Bobby Portis, you're still going to need a backup center power forward who can do something. And the one thing you don't want to do is start putting Giannis down low, having to play defense against centers when you need him to take an offensive, when you need him to be more of an offensive guy.
I'm going
to
ask you this. So I don't know. I really honestly don't know how this feels. The closest for me to having like a favorite player being traded was when the Bulls moved on from Rose. But at that point, it was already, and it was the writing was on the wall just because the city kind of turned on him. The fan base kind of turned. It was a weird time. It's not the same. Giannis is loved, brought the city a title. Mm-hmm. Feels like he does a lot in the community. And he's just like also just, he's what you hope an athlete is. He seems like a humble, good person. I mean, as a Bulls fan, I see Giannis, I'm like, God, I'd kill for her. I would kill. I told you. I'll take him to Greek Town. We have great Greek Town. Saganaki on me, dude. He loves, was it Avli? He loves, didn't he open one up here?
They opened Avli up here. It's not good.
That's fine. We'll get the original one in Chicago. It's better. He'll love it.
You know, we didn't even really.
He'll love it.
Like the other thing I want to hit on is let's talk. We want to make sure that we talk. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, restaurant stuff a little bit. We'll hit on, you know, what we cooked this week, what we like. I think there's a lot of conversations we
have. Yeah, that's what we should give you more previews of, like, what the thoughts process in this. You know that it is apparent. We've already touched on it. The crossover between food and sports is so apparent. And I'm looking forward to having conversations with fellow chefs, maybe food media members and athletes to talk about both sides of it. Because I, as social media cook or what do you want to call it, I have that DNA of an athlete in me, the competitiveness. I look at people making for things that I do, pizzas and sandwiches. I'll see folks online creating things. I'm like, no, I can do better than that. Like, yeah, I will be better than that. I just shake my head that I can't stand like 90% of like the food media stuff that I see. And I'm like, no, I can do better than that. And that's the competitive edge of sports, that my sports background is like so apparent with it. I don't think a lot of people, even besides like friends, family, and like the close circle, I don't think people realize how competitive I am and how much it comes out to me. Like I'm not a LeBron fan, but the strive for greatness is like true. Like you strive for greatness in your profession and everything. And I'd love to learn more, about chefs' firsthand experiences in kitchens and like building, rebuilding, seeing a restaurant fall and falter, and how do you bounce back and build that into success? I mean,
there's so many unique learned in there.
Yeah, I'm like, sure. I'm so excited to learn that. And then I think honestly, I've noticed a big growing trend of athletes. There's a lot of athletes that are really interested in cooking and food. Like Jalen Johnson of the Bears does a week. He's been doing a cooking series in the off season where he's like into cooking. I think that's really cool. Spice Adams, you know, former Bear, does. He was on like the Great American Baking Show.
Oh yeah.
And I've already, I'm putting feelers out. We're going to get Spice on the show.
That would be amazing. Yeah. I mean, again, one of my favorite lesser known Bears players of all time.
Oh, he's great. He's
a weird, awkward, like, I mean, he was part of those Urlacher years, the Lovie Smith years. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you don't have a championship to talk about, this is what we,
yeah,
these are the people we look at and we're like, oh man, that guy that played. Anyways, I'm going to ask you one last thing, and it's topical because it's today.
Yeah.
Is there any chance the Knicks win tonight? And if there is, what do they need to do in order to make that happen?
The Knicks will win tonight. I think they're going to win this game. It's going to go back to game six, and then the pressure is going to be put on Indy. They're going to really need to close it out at home because they're not going to want to go back to MSG for game seven. I'm sorry, this series should be 2-2. I know the Pacers won the last game handily. The Knicks really, they should have won the first game. Yeah. That, I know they blew it, but also they just ran into a buzzsaw of Nesmith, just got hot.
Yep.
Like you can't, if a guy hits six straight threes and Haliburton gets a lucky bounce on the three, like what do you do? What can you do in that, you know? And so this series should be 2-2. It's not, but I think they come back tonight. It has to start from the beginning. They cannot get off to a slow start. They can't be down 15 these things where they expend so much energy on these runs and these comebacks. They need to get off to a hot start. Brunson needs to take kind of just set the tone at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Drive to the basket. Don't just settle for outside shots. Cat needs to be aggressive from the start as well. And just feed off that energy. I mean, like, what has MSG is electric. They're, the fans are crazy. But that team is built for energy. Josh Hart, Mitchell Robinson is been playing like a beast, and then obviously putting him in the starting lineup. Like the hustle plays, getting the crowd involved, they need to get at that early. And I also just, they have to stop committing so many dumb fouls. This series has been, I mean, the refs have been awful both ways.
But I mean, you everybody argues
both ways.
That.
No, exactly. Both ways. That's what I'm saying. The both ways. But there's been so many ticky-tack fouls both ways. But be smarter. You can't have Brunson in foul trouble right off the bat and sit him out. That's why that Tibbs have had to go down into his bench and is playing Landry Shamet. Yeah. Like I don't need to see Landry Shamet in 2025. Like no, I don't. I know he was part of the comeback a couple days ago, but like, come on. But I do. I do think that they're going to win tonight. It will go into Game Six, and then I don't. You know, I don't know. And he's just. They have the Team of Destiny vibes. They've had it. I don't want to see. I know you're not a fan. I don't want it.
I really, really hate that team. It's funny too, because it's like it's probably my most hated team right now against the most hated team of my childhood. But I like this Knicks team. I think there's the way they're built is really fun. I'm always going to be a Tibbs fan. I think Tibbs is a great coach. I think he's a great defensive coach, especially. I think you're right. I think they cannot start slow. I think they have to play with a sense of urgency, mm-hmm. like right from the get go.
Yeah,
it's cliche. This is going to sound super cliche, but play a full 48 minutes.
Yeah, yeah,
like they need to play the whole game. Don't let anything off. And somebody needs to help Jalen Brunson out on defense. They can't just let him just hang out there all by himself. It seems like they're just taking advantage of him right and left.
They can get in the switches. And they're getting these switches.
The switches are great, but they're
caught in that.
It's putting him in foul trouble. It's putting pressure on him. And Cat needs to attack. And I think you're right about that. Like look at Towns attacking down low. Siakam and Miles Turner on backpedal. Put those guys in foul trouble.
I know. Like, or you gotta get Halliburton in foul trouble. Ugh, you know,
Tyrese Halliburton.
I'm not I don't like him. I mean, he's awesome. He's awesome. He's playing it. He's embracing it. I think he's just a little too much. Like he hasn't done anything yet, and he acts like he's done so much.
And it's just saying Nixon seven.
Nick, I hope. I hope Nixon seven. For sure they're winning tonight. I would love to say this is still going seven. I just in my heart, I feel just Indy right now is just, even though this has been a close series, and I do think it should have been, like I said, should have been even series right now. I don't know. They just have that, like, you've seen enough games, seen enough teams where you're like, they just kind of have it though. Yeah. Just kind of have that feeling that they just, things are just kind of going their way. But also you can say that for the Knicks too, though.
Yeah.
You know, they've had 3 20 point comebacks this playoffs. I just want, I so desperately want to see Tibbs win. I want Tibbs to get a title.
No, I get it.
I really want to. I'm diehard Bulls fan through and through. We should never let him go. Dumbest decision we've made is really, you know, letting go the second best coach in our team history. And I think he doesn't get the respect that I think he deserves. Because of what happened with Rose and this narrative that he plays players too much, and
I think Hooped realizes it. I think your average fan doesn't, but I think Hooped realizes that Tibbs is really where it's at.
Yeah, Tibbs just dedicates his life to basketball, and I just want him happy.
Well, I don't
he
think
he just looks so sad sometimes. I'm like, come on, I want him happy.
I think even if Tibbs wins, he's going to be sad again because I don't think anything's stopping OKC. You know how many?
No,
games,
I know.
You know how many games they lost to against Eastern Conference Finals teams or Eastern Conference teams this year?
No,
one.
Who?
I don't know. I don't know the one team, but I know it's one team. They're like 28-1 against
really?
Against the Eastern Conference.
Why do I think the Bulls beat them?
Oh, that'd be so funny.
I'm gonna look this up.
While he's looking this up. Yeah. I have to get downstairs because I have to host tonight. Oh, you know we're gonna be doing this every week.
Yeah.
We're gonna have ups. We're gonna have downs. I think you stick with us because this is gonna be really fun.
Yeah. We're gonna have some good guests along the way. Great conversation.
Maybe some cooking. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we got the World of Cooking content. We got Bear season's coming. Chicago Squares is back.
I cannot wait to hear back. About Chicago Squares.
It's going to be great. Make sure you subscribe to us. We're going to be on Spotify and all anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Over the Line Podcast. Follow us on there. And you also follow Dan. What's your...
I'm at Chef Dan Jacobs.
And I'm at The Real Billy Z. So follow us on there as well. Yeah, we're going to have a fun ride. We're going to blend together the world of food and sports. We have some laughs. Hopefully not make you cry, but if you want to cry too, well, who knows? Maybe we'll have some, you know, Sun Oil content on this. I don't even know. But it's been a good time. But let's go. It's been good stuff. Hopefully Nixon 7, we can come back and say the next time we get together. But this is fun.
Yeah. Guys, take it easy.
All right. Peace.
Over!